Good morning, everyone. Hope you had a lovely breakfast. And now, better than breakfast is the morning Dhamma feast. To be able to teach something which is of help to each one of you. And of course, many of you have meditated before in your life. And sometimes people keep telling me, said, oh yeah, I know I'm supposed to be peaceful. I know I'm supposed to let go. I know I'm supposed to be nice and calm. But how do you do that? And first of all, the quick answer to that question, how do you meditate? How do you keep calm? How do you let go? And the answer is, as soon as you try to do it, you're not letting go. You're doing something. So the whole thing is learning how to put things down. I've sold this simile so many times, but it gives me the opportunity to take a glass of water and have a drink. How do I let go of the cup of water? Simply just put it down and leave it alone. Can you put down a cup of water? Has anyone taught you how to do that? That's what you do when you let go in meditation. You stop trying to control things. You leave it alone. You make peace. Be kind, be gentle. For those of you who don't know, that these are three of my favourite phrases. Because that's the second factor of the Noble Eightfold Path. Sometimes I have to keep saying this to make sure that people understand. I don't just make this up for myself because it's convenient. This is actually how the Buddha taught. The second factor of the Eightfold Path is to let go, make peace, be kind, and be gentle. And that's such an important part of the practice of meditation and also the practice of how to get enlightened, if that's what you want. But sometimes you see that people can be just so, not kind, but really fierce on themselves. I don't know, you may have slept in this morning. So what do you do if you slept in this morning? Do you decide, okay, I slept in this morning, I better not eat today? Has anyone done that before? Not me. My meditation is really good. So you're not harming yourself. You're being very gentle to yourself and kind to yourself. You find that's a beautiful way of learning how to let go. First of all, it seems to be counterintuitive. If I just let go, what will happen? Everything will go wrong. But there's always wonderful stories. And I love stories. And they're some of my favourites. And even though the terrible thing about things being recorded and going on Zoom and having all these recordings available for people, it's very hard to get a new story because people have seen it so many times. But anyway, here it comes. This particular version of the story that I was giving some teachings to a clinical psychologist who was from Singapore, and she was visiting Bodhinyana Monastery for a few days. And when she was meditating, she found it so difficult to get her mind to be peaceful. She was a very young lady and just very, very devoted to Buddhism and really knew that meditation was what she should learn. But it was so hard to stop her mind from thinking. And so, after a while, she came to see me. And so I told her this story. And Singaporean Buddhists are usually very, very respectful. But this time, this young lady couldn't help herself. She was rolling on the floor, holding her tummy, laughing her head off. And I had to finish the story first, then ask why. And the story was that story of this amazing mother here in Perth whose 5 or 6 year old son sort of threw a tantrum and told her mummy, "Mummy, I don't love you anymore. I'm leaving home." Now, some of you mothers might have faced that before, fathers as well. Your child just doesn't love you anymore, throws a tantrum, "I want to leave home." It's only 5 or 6. So this mummy, she was just so smart. She was full of emotional intelligence. So what she said was, "Okay, darling, I'll help you pack." Now, many of you may have thought that's a good idea, but haven't had the courage to do it, to help your son pack when he wants to leave home the first time. So she helped him pack a little suitcase and said to him, "Before you go, please let me give you something to eat, because life is a long journey. You've got to have something to eat." So made his favourite sandwich and maybe, I don't know, something else like a donut or something, packed in a nice paper bag, and at the doorway of her house, she kissed her son goodbye. "Have a lovely life, darling. Please don't forget to keep in touch." And waved him off as proudly carrying a suitcase and a brown paper bag with his lunch, walked down the garden path, opened the gate, turned left and went off into his life. The first time he'd ever left home by himself. 5 or 6 years of age. What's going to happen? That's right. About even before he reached the corner of the street, was terribly homesick. Turned around, walked back, went through the gate, down the path. Mother hadn't moved. "Welcome home, darling." That's emotional intelligence. The kid is not going to leave you for too long. When I was saying this to the Singaporean girl, she was laughing and rolling on the floor. I said, "What are you doing?" And she said, "You wouldn't believe this, Ajahn Brahm. Same thing happened to me when I was about 5 or 6. I had a really sort of running with my mum. I said, 'I don't love you anymore, mum. I'm leaving.'" And the mother did the same, helped pack her bag, but never made any sandwiches for her daughter. Instead, gave her $20 to buy her own lunch. If you've been to Singapore, you know, yeah, that makes sense. And so anyway. So, and that wasn't in a sort of a house like in Perth in Australia. It was one of these flats, apartment blocks. And and so I had to just reach up for the, I don't know, first of all, the downstairs button, the ground floor. So the mum waved her off at the elevator door. "Bye-bye, darling, have a wonderful life." And of course she pressed the bottom number on the elevator, the ground floor. And by the time they got to the ground floor, the poor little girl again was totally homesick. And so managed just to reach the button of the level where she lived. And so the elevator went down and straight up again. And when the doors opened, mother was there. "Welcome home, darling." Now, isn't that a beautiful way? Because there's no bad feeling afterwards. You put the lock the kid in the room, you tell it off, you give it all sorts of punishments or whatever. What does that do? That doesn't solve the problem. But you let it go, knowing the kid will come back. And of course, that simile, I think you all know, is actually how you deal with your mind. So the mind wants to wander off somewhere, wants to think about, it's fed up with listening to Ajahn Brahm go on and meditating. What did I do this for? Oh, crack. How many more days left? 8 more days. Some people think like that. If you don't think like that now, you'll think about that during the week. Well, 2 or 3 more days. So, but sometimes you get it right. 2 or 3 more days. Oh, it's not long enough. I want 6 days. Another 2 or 3 weeks. 2 or 3 months, 2 or 3 years, 20 years. But when you let people go, you let your mind be, you're caring for it. It wants to go, fine, off you go, mind. What do you want to think today, mind? What really naughty fantasy, stupid plan, crazy ideas do you want to think today? You tell your mind that. The most important thing is you're being kind to your mind. And what happens is the mind doesn't want to leave you. Never look at your mind as something you control or something you have to train. It's not yours, your mind. That's repeated so often in the Buddha suttas, not me, not mine, not a self. But you have to be kind to it. When you're kind to it, it's amazing just how the mind just wants to be with you. I don't know why it is. I just had my breakfast. You wouldn't believe just how much was offered for my breakfast. It's a big, big table there, but the table was almost not big enough. There's only one of me. Well, maybe one and a half. But why? Why, if ever you go over the road there to Bodhinyana Monastery for lunchtime, it's incredible the amount of food we get there. We often used to say, you know, we eat one meal a day. We don't eat one meal a day. One banquet a day. One feast. And then why? Because when you have these things happen, I always like to, you know, investigate, why has this happened? It's because, you know, there's something about, like, kindness, not force. No criticism. Have I ever criticized you for laughing too much? There she goes again. Of course not. Because you get into a state of mind of not criticizing, of being kind, being gentle. And that, for some reason, is so rare in our world that people love it. It's a place of friendliness, a place where people are welcome, a place where people can just relax. They're not told off when they do something wrong. What was that story? Whatever stories. They're old stories, but sometimes at my age, we call them golden oldies. And that's where this man was in training. You know, the people in white over in Bodhinyana Monastery, they're in training to eventually ordain as novices and then as monks. And this young man was in training. And part of the training was keeping 8 precepts. And one of those precepts is not eating in the afternoon or evening or at night time. So this sunny young man, this was wanting to become a novice or a monk eventually. But, you know, what's it like as a young man? In the afternoon, evening, you can't eat. He was getting so hungry. You know, I can't eat, he said, it's against the rules. But you know what it's like? He found himself in the kitchen and no one was around. Everybody was meditating somewhere. So he opened the storeroom and the refrigerator. Oh, there's some bread there. And so he made himself a sandwich. Worse than making himself a sandwich, he ate it. At night time. Now, this is not an invitation for you to do the same here in China Grove. But anyway, he ate his sandwich in the evening. And the following morning, he came up to me and said, oh, Ajahn Brahm, I'm terrible. I was probably would throw me out of this monastery. I did something terrible last night. And I think this was actually what I said to him, first of all. I said, well, who did you kill? Well, that's terrible, you know. He said, no, I didn't kill anybody. He said, I made myself a sandwich and I ate it. And this poor young man, he felt so sorry for him. He said he didn't sleep all night with the guilt of eating a sandwich in the evening. And so and then I told him, I said, look, you know, eat more at lunchtime. You shouldn't get used to eating the one meal a day. I've been doing one meal a day for 46 years. It's all right for me, and I'm reasonably healthy, too much. But nevertheless, it's good enough. He said, eat more at lunchtime. And number two, if there is in the evening time you feel hungry, there's all these, like, we can't call them, like, allowables. I call them loopholes. All the loopholes you can eat in the evening. And there's heaps of them. You just go in there this evening at 5 or 6 o'clock, whenever you have your tea time. I said, was this allowable? Yeah. So you have your loopholes. I said, eat those. And then he came up to me, and I'm really thankful that he did this and asked me. He said, Ajahn Brahm, that's not good enough. What do you mean? He said, look, he said, if you don't give me some penance, some punishment, I know my character, he said, I'll just do it again. Yes, I gave him cheese and chocolate and honey and goodness knows what else, but he said, I prefer sandwiches. So I said, I'll get in there and I'll eat it again. You have to give me some penance to be afraid of. And it was just wonderful coincidence. So that morning I was reading this book by, I think it was Robert Hughes, The Fatal Shore, about the early history of Australia, the colonists and the convicts, and what they used to do to those convicts. It was gross, so cruel. I said to this young man, I said, okay, I've just been reading about traditional Australian punishments. So I decided that if you want a punishment, I will give you 50 strokes of the cat. You know that really terrible whip they used to use? And this man, his face went whiter than the clothes he was wearing. You know, when people are really sort of a bit afraid, they sort of the lips start to wobble a bit. That's not what I meant. He really thought that in the Buddhist monastery he would do anything like that, flog people. Well, I kept it up for, you know, a few minutes, and then I said, well, you know, you wanted a punishment. That's traditional Australian punishment. So you have to do 50 strokes of the cat. And before he could actually get his breath back and just plead some clemency, I had to tell him what the 50 strokes of the cat mean in the Buddhist monastery of the Theravada tradition. We had that time, we had two cats. Find any one of them. These days we use teddy bears, 50 strokes of the teddy bear. One, two, three, four. Because the reason he wanted punishment, because he wasn't kind to himself. He didn't have enough loving kindness. And sometimes you can learn that, you know, from a little cat or a dog or a teddy bear or something. Learn some kindness. So you don't need to be punished. Instead, you learn what happens. You're kind. When you're kind to your body relaxes. When it relaxes, it heals. It gets quite healthy. Learn just how to relax the body. One of the reasons why we have these teddy bears here, there's heaps of them over there. What's that you got over there, sir? Not a teddy bear. It's a cushion with a hat on. Okay, I've never seen that one before. They started off with just a teddy bear. We had just one to start off with years ago, and then somebody bought another one, and they must have been opposite gender because now look how many offspring we've got. But the reason we do this is because it's always people don't have enough kindness. Without kindness, you can't let go. You're always trying to get something or do something, and life is never good enough. The retreat centre is not good enough. The food is not good enough. The talks aren't good enough. The chair's not good enough. Nothing is good enough. When you have kindness, you see this teddy bear. Oh, that's it's got a nice little bow on it. The formal wear. So when you have some kindness there, you find it's much, much easier to let go. What do you mean by letting go? You can enjoy this moment. So anyway, I sent that guy off. Okay, find one of the cats. One, two, three. And when you've done your 50 strokes of the cat, you can come back to me. And of course, you know, he did very well in his life. And he didn't need that punishment. It was just learning how to be kind to himself. Learning how to be kind to your mind. So I look at my mind and it's weird. And I'm really kind to it. So, oh, you're on a retreat now. You've got to sort of teach all these people and you've got to inspire. It's a waste of time me teaching. Imagine I gave a really inspiring talk. And after the talk, started getting sleepy. That wouldn't be very impressive, would it? Would it? But sometimes we have this word these days called authenticity. You're not trying to put on a show. Just who you are. So little by little, as long as I'm kind to myself, to my mind, to my body and my mind cooperates with me. I mentioned this last night. It's a very important point. Why is it your mind wanders off? You're sitting down meditating. You've got nothing to do all day. But all the things you start thinking about when your mind wanders off, they're total rubbish things, aren't they? None of them is very useful. But nevertheless, we think about this, we think about that. Why? It took me many years to figure that the answer to that question. And I, like many other people at the time, thought, if my mind wanders off, catch it and bring it back. It wanders off again, bring it back again. Wanders off again, bring it back again. Wanders off again, bring it back again. After about 6 or 7 years of that, and that's meditating all the time, you get a bit sort of, no, this isn't working. So why? And that's when I love similes from my real life, because with similes, you can relate the problem to yourself and to others, and the solution's obvious. And this is a simile of you getting the telephone call on your mobile phone. You know, on a sort of Saturday afternoon, Sunday afternoon, you get this call from a friend and say, hey, are you free this afternoon? I say, yeah, I'm free. And he said, why don't you come to this coffee shop, this new coffee shop, which I really, really like. They make really excellent, this is where I get a bit lost because I don't go to coffee shops. Is it flat whites? Is there such a thing as a flat white?
Yep.
There is. Yay! Okay. I do delicious flat whites. You don't really like flat whites. And we said, and also, they get this amazing chocolate chip muffins. You don't like chocolate chip muffins. And your friend says, and we can sit in the back. You don't like sitting in the back. You like sitting in the front. And we can talk about politics. You know, none of your stupid spirituality, because politics is important. You know, it creates a lot of prosperity and stops wars and stuff, or creates wars. And I've got an hour, says your friend. And they call you up. They invite you to go to their coffee shop to eat what they like to eat, not what you like to eat. They don't even ask you what you like. And to eat their favourite, snacks, and to talk about what they want to talk about, for how long they want to sit there. And what would you do? Somebody did that to me, called me up and told me where they wanted to invite me, what they wanted to give me to eat, and what they want to talk about, I would try to escape any means possible. So in that story, I said, well, you say, oh, yes, I just remembered I've got to go to the dentist this afternoon. So, and maybe next time. So anyway, so you hang up. And because you're a Buddhist and you keep your precepts, you ring your dentist to make an appointment that afternoon. And then just after you made the appointment, another friend calls. And the other friend says, oh, are you free this afternoon? He said, oh, no, I've got a dentist appointment. Oh, it's such a shame. You know, you always tell me about your favourite coffee shop, you know, where they make this amazing cappuccino. Two cappuccinos, correct? I need to do more research and go to more coffee shops. I drink tea. Anyway, so, amazing cappuccino and these delicious... They do delicious muffins as well, but you don't like muffins, do you? He said, no, no, I prefer these little biscuits, these cookies. Oh, they make these amazing cookies. You always talk about the amazing cookies in this shop, so I'd like to try some too, said the person giving you a call. And, you know, you've always been talking about Buddhism and meditation. I've never done that before. I'd really like to talk about it. And, you know, you can sit in the front, wherever you want to sit, it's fine by me. So when you get an invitation from a friend to go to your favourite coffee shop, to try what you like to drink, to eat what you like to eat, and talk about what you want to talk about, what do you say? You say, I'm cancelling the dentist. I'll be there in 10 minutes. And an hour, when you're with someone you really like and you get on with, it's amazing. 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours, 5 hours, the whole afternoon just goes like that. Now, that's just a simile, which I hope you can relate to. And it's talking about your mind and meditation. When you sit down and close your eyes, and Ajahn Brahm says, keep your back straight. Ajahn Brahm says, watch your breath. Okay? If your mind wanders off, bring it back. If it wanders off many times, bang. If you treat you like that as a control freak, your mind tries to make another appointment. Any fantasy, plan, memory, anything to get out of doing what you're told to do. But instead of that, if you're kind to your mind, so you ask your mind, mind, what do you want to do next hour, half an hour? You ask your mind that. And often the mind says, what, you really care what I want to do? Not, you're not telling me what to do. And so often in my life that's happened. Now, once I've really understood what the mind is and how it works, is to be kind to your mind. So sometimes I ask my mind, how are you feeling today? Do you want to meditate? And the mind says, well, you mean chilling out with you? So yeah. So my mind and I have just this wonderful relationship. We spend such wonderful hours together in the cave, just chilling out together. My mind and I, like best friends. You got a best friend in life? What are they like? When you sort of, you have a few moments, you sort of sit down with a cup of coffee or just chill out together in one of your houses or something, and time just goes past, like time doesn't exist. And I've developed that relationship with my mind over many years. When it comes to meditating, I close my eyes, say, bye-bye all you lot. Now with my friend, my real friend inside my mind. So we hang out together. So we're at peace together. My mind don't go anywhere. It's just always with the mind. So that restlessness is just disappears. Because you're happy to be together. So one does not want to run away from the other. And you don't have to hold it there. You love each other, your mind and you. Which means it's easy to stick together. So after a while, that is how you manage to have a peaceful mind, by learning how to respect your mind. And the mind respects you, the watcher. So little by little, the mind becomes very still. What happens next is the amazing part. It's not just dullness or just nothing much happens. Because you're making peace with your mind, you're staying together, you're not wandering off anywhere, you're not fighting a war with yourself. This is where I want to be, and this is where my mind is. And if those two are the same place, wonderful, you're at peace. But if you're somewhere and your mind wants to be somewhere else, of course, that's tension, that's stress. So little by little, where I am, that's where my mind wants to be. We're happy to be here together. And then what happens? Because you're not fighting a war with this moment, your mind becomes really peaceful. It gets energized. And like I was saying last night, just you see this mind, this breath, so much clarity. And it's just easy to watch the breath. For years again, I made a mistake of trying to force the mind onto the breath. I watched your breath way too early, when it wasn't ready, prepared to watch the breathing, which means it was a struggle, and as soon as it possibly could, my mind ran away. But these days, if I'm too tired, which you know sometimes I am, I just, okay, have a rest. Just lay down on the bed, 15 minutes or something, and just totally relax. It's one of the things which is part of the meditation, learning how to relax the body, and then you relax the mind. Sometimes instead of calling it meditation, I just call it relaxing to the max, really chilling out. And I'm explaining this on the body first of all, and then on the mind, because it always happens when I just start my meditating, just watch my body and just really relax it. You get to a point, it's not usually that long, when the body relaxes very deeply and it feels pleasant. It's called like the delightful relaxation of the body. For many years, I think in one of the first books which I wrote, I called it, you know, the beautiful breath, but I call it delightful, I think is a much better word these days. So your body is delightful. Just, I've got a 69-year-old body. It should have more aches and pains than it has. So it should have more aches and pains than I can really feel, but you relax it too much and the body feels really good. Feels like it's just had a massage or been in a hot bath. Or what else can you do with your body? I don't know. But anyway, it feels really comfortable. And that's a delightful feeling. So when I recognize that, and I'm not, it's a weird thing to say this, but many people are afraid of happiness. But I'm not afraid of happiness. Strange thing to say as a monk, as a renunciant, as someone doesn't have very much and sleeps on the floor in a cave. But I have happiness there. I'm not afraid of enjoying the beautiful simplicity of my cave or the relaxation of my body. It feels so nice. And that is a very positive thing, because every time I notice that relaxation of my body, the body gets more relaxed. It goes deeper into relaxation, which means that my body and I can be so at peace together. But what happens next is the body disappears. It's so relaxed, no aches and pains, that it's saying, I'm fine now, you can go off into the mind. And I do the same with the mind, really relax my mind. You know, when I really relax the mind and feel it delightful just being here, all of the past and future just vanish. It's something which a lot of times people also ask me. There, poor nose. A little bit of hay fever. Are you okay now, nose? Okay. When you're kind of, it's not being stupid or silly, it actually works. Try it. So anyway, when I start watching the present moment, and one of the problems which many people have, they say they just can't do that because it's really important, really negative things or sometimes positive things about the past and the future which shall weigh on their mind and draw their attention. So one of the things which I practice and notice, there is something about the future which is really, really important. It's bothering you. Don't just try to get rid of it. If you try to ignore it and say, I'm not going to stay in the present moment and fight that future, you find again you get too tired and worn out. Instead, be kind to it. What do I mean by being kind to the future? Give it the most positive perception of what the future can be. It's being kind to it. May my future be happy and well. May all my difficulties and problems says, get less. May my tumours get smaller. May my, what else you got? My boss get kinder when I go back to work on a few days' time. May my husband miss me so much when I'm on this retreat. He's much kinder to me when I go back. May, I don't know what, but think of the future with a positive mind. I call it like being kind to the future and softening it. It does become soft. But if you have like animals in a forest, there's many wild animals in this forest. Actually, someone the other day, they said that they saw a group of pigs in the forest here. Wild pigs. In all the years I've been here, I've never seen any wild pigs. And I thought, is it because, why? And I think probably because people here are so kind that maybe the animals feel that, feel this is a safe place. So maybe they come because of the kindness here. It softens them. There is a snake who lives around here somewhere. We see him every time, but it's a bit too cold at this time, so the snake is probably still sleeping somewhere. It's a beautiful snake. So he really likes being patted on the head, but please don't do that. Now you see these animals, and some of them are very dangerous animals, so people say. But if you're kind to them, and you let the animals, you know, they do what they want to do, you do what you want to do, but, you know, just go separate ways. The animals feel they're not threatened here. They don't feel fear when you just notice them and watch them. You can leave them alone. There was this one Anagarika once, just a little bit to the west of this hall here, but still in a Jhana Grove property. He was sitting down in the forest, just meditating, nice and peacefully, and he heard a sound, and it was a group of emus. And one of the emus came up to him. Now, if ever you've seen an emu, they're very skittish. They can't walk slowly, and they're always sort of jumping up and down. They're very frightful. But one of them, they saw this man in white, just sitting quietly on the ground. And of course, what do the animals do? They came up there and sniffed him. It's wonderful having sort of being sniffed by an emu. And just they sniffed and they went away. So there's so many wonderful things like that. If you're not afraid and don't overreact and are peaceful to things, you soften the reaction of the wild animals in the forest. And it's the same if you don't overreact to things in the mind of the future and the past. Then it's like they come to sniff you, the future, and then they just go away by themselves. So you just are soft with them. I don't know what you're afraid of in the future or what you're looking forward to in the future, but please soften it first of all. Be kind to it. And then it's very easy for it to disappear. The same with stuff in the past as well. What somebody did this morning. Oh, it's amazing just having get so upset at the smallest thing, which happens, you know, in the dining room or in your hut, or, you know, you didn't have a good sleep last night because one of those people in the room kept banging the doors. You get upset when somebody bangs the doors. If they do bang the door, please remember that once the door has been banged, the sound disappears. But the echoes in your head go on for a long time. So what makes a more noise? The banging of the door or your negativity, which keeps that memory going again and again and again and again and again. So be soft. So when you're soft to a person, the past and the future, it's much easier to let it go. Kindness is really important. Same over in Bodhinyana Monastery. There's many monks over there, and sometimes a monk says a bad thing to another monk. They're just human beings. They're learning, they're growing. So if they say something bad, why? So first of all, you say, well, maybe I misheard it. Maybe they weren't saying it to me. Maybe they're saying it to another monk. So try and be so soft to give the benefit of the doubt to the other beings. And it becomes so easy to let go of the past and let go of the future. Now what happens when you are kind to all these thoughts? You don't sort of criticize them or criticize yourself. You're kind to them. You're creating the cause for letting things go. You're making peace with life and yourself. And the kindness means just like the animals, the snakes may come up, visit you, and then go away again. And this is a strange story. It hasn't happened to me, but this happened to my preceptor. You know, he told me this story so many years ago, that you know, he was just learning how to meditate. And so he was meditating in a coconut plantation close to the monastery. And a nice, good meditation. When he came out afterwards, he realized there was something in his lap. It wasn't a teddy bear, it was a snake. The snake had come and seen this monk meditating nice and quietly and decided that a monk's lap has got two important qualities. One, it's safe, and two, it's warm. So the snake coiled itself up in the monk's lap, having a nice little rest. And when the monk opened his eyes and he saw that was a really venomous snake. You know, when he was a layperson, he'd run a mile from a snake like that. And it was actually in his lap. And so you know, he told me, he thought, poor snake. He's having a nice rest. I don't want to disturb him. And what was surprising for him, that he had no fear at all from that snake. And he was totally at peace with it. That's what meditation does. It calms your mind down so much you don't have fear. And so it was just in his lap. He waited there for a few more minutes. Then the snake decided it had enough of a rest. And this went away again. All human beings need a rest. A nice quiet place. Oh, this old story comes up about the lady over in, I think it was San Francisco or somewhere around that area. And when she came home one day, she had all the shopping, so her arms were full of bags of shopping. And she managed to get the key out and open the front door of her house. And when she opened the front door of her house, this big dog ran past her and into her house. It wasn't her dog. She didn't know who the dog was, but just went straight into her house. And she couldn't stop it because her hands were full of the groceries from the supermarket. She'd done her shopping. So she put the shopping on the kitchen table as soon as she could and went looking for the dog. And the dog was actually curled up in a corner of her house, just quietly sleeping. It went to sleep so quickly. It was a nice little dog. It was clean. Had a collar on, so it wasn't really like a wild dog or a stray dog, but she didn't know where it came from. So she just let the dog sleep there for an hour or two. And after a couple of hours, the dog woke up, came to see her, woof, and she let it out, and the dog went away. The dog came back the next day, same time. So she let it in. And it went to a nice corner of the house and just slept after a couple of hours. She let it out and it went away again. And this happened for about 3 or 4 days in a row. And she thought, this is really weird. Where does this dog come from? It was clean, it was well fed. And it's obviously, you know, had an owner somewhere. So she was smart enough to notice because the dog had a collar on it, that could be the way she could find out. So she, on a piece of paper, she wrote This is a wonderful dog. I don't know its name. I don't know where it's from. But it's come to my house every afternoon, a couple of hours in the afternoon, for a sleep. And it's quite welcome. I just was quite interested. You know, where's this dog from? She wrote on a piece of paper, folded it up, and tucked it in the collar. So that the dog, you know, when it went home, it carried the message with it. And the next day, when the dog came back again, there was a reply. No, Mel. And the reply was, this is my dog, and it lives a couple of blocks away in my house. And please excuse me, he said, with a very talkative wife, about five children, two of which are under five, and his poor dog doesn't get any rest. He said, it comes to your house for a bit of peace and quiet. Signed, the owner, P.S., can I come too? So, even animals, they like a bit of peace and quiet. So if you're kind and peaceful to animals, they're always kind and peaceful to you. And if you're kind and peaceful to your mind, it's always cooperative to you. So one of the ways to meditate, and this is serious, is when you start your meditation, ask your mind, mind, what do you want to do in the next half an hour or an hour? What do you want to do? Ask it. Now, you've lived a long time with your mind. I think you should pretty much understand its answer. You know, sometimes your mind will tell you, this is too early, I need to go back to bed. And I've done that for so many years as a monk. And I've had a really nice sleep, got up in the morning, done my meditation, done the breakfast, done a few chores. And I ask my mind, what do you want to do? And it says, I want to go to bed. It's weird sometimes, because I wonder why. But I don't question my mind. If that's what it says, okay. And I know my mind, when my mind's making it up, when it's really true, I go to bed, and you go to sleep very quickly. Half an hour, 45 minutes later, you wake up and you feel great. You know, I don't know why, but I'm pretty sure these days that it's because my mind knows there's some sort of sickness or illness which is beginning to happen, and it wants to stop it before it gets too bad. Just take a rest, and I can sort it all out, says the mind. And I trust that mind, and I do that. And Venerable Ananda, when was the last time you saw me sick? Sorry? When was the last time you saw me sick? Thank you for being honest. And sometimes it wonders me, how come I'm really healthy? And that's one of the things which I do. I listen to my mind, listen to my body. And I trust it. Because I'm kind to it, it's kind to me. We work together pretty well. Very simple thing. So when you, instead of the mind wandering off all over the place, you've got a good attitude in relationship with it. The coffee shop simile, the first person who tells you what to do, where to go, how to do it, for how long, that's called control freak. You're going to sit here for 1 hour now, and you're going to watch the breath, and you're going to sit this way, not that way. Now, if that's actually what you tell yourself, that's control freak. And you find after a while you get so tense, there's no peace, no happiness. You just, after a while, you don't want to do that anymore. Second person is kindness. What do you want to eat? What coffee do you like to drink? Where do you want to drink it? What do you want to talk about? You find that there you can stay with that for a long time. So actually what happens then? You soften the past and soften the future, and the future and the past is, you know, it's not compelling anymore. So you're just staying in the moment. Just being here right now. And that just brings me on to what I really should have started talking about at the beginning. is the, what I, you know, for want of a better word, called the Emperor's Three Questions meditation, which I do so often these days to begin the meditation. Emperor's Three Questions, a famous story. I hope you all know it. If not, you can ask a question. I can tell it again this evening. But it's a beautiful story from, again, Leo Tolstoy. And when is the most important time? Obvious answer now. Who is the most important person? The one right in front of you, whoever that happens to be. And what's the only thing to do? The most important thing to do is to care. And of course, turning that into meditation practice. When is the most important time? Obviously now. What is the most important thing to be aware of? Whatever is happening right now. It's happening now. That's the only thing to be aware of. That's the most important thing to be aware of. Even if you think it shouldn't be like this, I'm supposed to be blissing out in deep meditation. No, what is actually happening now? Not where you want to be, but where are you right now? Oh, I'm tired. That's important, to be with that, to know it. In this moment, it's the most important object in the whole world. And what's the most important thing to do? To care for it. And as you heard me on the story before, I'm just running out of time, don't try and cure it, get rid of it, make it better, do something with it. Care for it as you care for a little snake on your lap. Or if you care for a little mouse which comes into your room. Or a little cockroach. The cockroach is just going around doing its thing. Cockroaches are very helpful. They clean up for us. So you don't need to do the sweeping yourself. Or whatever it is. Has anyone ever been killed by a cockroach? Okay. So after a while, whatever's in front of you is really important, and care for it. When you do that in your meditation, it's just so brilliant. Sometimes you're tired, you've got a bit of hay fever, or you get up in the morning, you didn't sleep well. So how can you meditate? So easy. Just close your eyes. What do I feel like now? I feel like, just be with the ugh-ness. And care for it. First of all, if whatever you're aware of right now, you give it importance, that is called mindfulness. You're connecting with this moment. And don't think you have to make it beautiful before you connect with it. Connect with anything. Whatever's happening right now, aches, pains, whatever else is happening in your body, just it's important because it's happening now. It's come to teach you something. What's the teaching? You don't know. But you're open to learning. And you're caring for it. What happens is, whatever ache and pain that was, it just, after a short while, it vanishes. That's happened to me. And then after a while, you get so peaceful. And you get energy. You feel good. So often in my life, that you have to perform in front of people. And sometimes I feel, bleh. I don't want to give a talk this morning. What do? You don't fight, you care. This moment is important for me, right now, caring for it. And you get energy up, clarity up, peace up. And you do that with your eyes closed when you're meditating. Wow. Into some very, very deep meditations, very quickly, very easily, when sometimes I think this shouldn't be happening. It's late at night. I've been working all day. How come I got all this energy? How come it's so peaceful? Simply because this is the nature of the mind. If you make peace with it, it makes peace with you. It energizes, and it feels very beautiful and peaceful. And it's still what meditation does. Some amazing experiences on this retreat. But to sum up the talk, if you are restless, please don't fight it. That restlessness, whatever you're experiencing, that is important. It's in front of you, it's happening, so be with it. If you're with it, and caring for it. It's amazing that that restlessness can't last very long. It soon vanishes. You don't use willpower in meditation. Wisdom power, kindness power. That is what works. Okay, I've talked enough this morning. If you have, during the whole of the retreat, if you have any complaints on this retreat, we have the retreat manager, Leha, at the back. So all the complaints go to Leha. Any praises or compliments, they come here. No, there's a question time this evening. So if you want to write those questions on a piece of paper outside, then I will attempt to answer them this evening from 8 to 9. Please don't write too many questions because there's quite a lot of you. And I really try my best to answer most of the questions. So if you want to go to bed early tonight, please don't ask so many questions. It's your fault. Okay, I think that's enough for today. So, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Very good, excellent. So enjoy today, see what happens. Yeah, sorry? You saw, okay. It's important, we saw. Okay, and the interviews start tomorrow, Sunday, when you have something to be interviewed about, hopefully. And so now it's free time until lunchtime. Excellent. And even though you can't talk to one another because we try and keep noble silence, there's no rule against smiling to one another. It makes people feel that they are recognized and valued.